Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
Well, hello and good Thursday, football fans. Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast. James Sharman here, alongside, as always, senior football writer for Sportsnet.ca, John Molinaro.
You enjoy that, saying that, for and, some and reason.
Week,
I have no idea.
And every week you mention it. Just go with it.
Okay.
Just go with it, okay? Okay. Be happy.
I'm happy with the title.
Happily,
I don't know why you find it so fascinating.
I would use other descriptions.
Okay. Oh, I know you would.
It's a really busy week. Some big games, of course, coming up this weekend, and lots of news this past week throughout the Premier League in particular. We'll get to as many as possible, including what does China mean for the Premier League? And is
good
China
question.
The new Premier League?
It's a very good question.
A lot of teams around Europe are thinking, hey, you hypocritical buggers. You did this to us all those years ago. Still, the monies are insane. So let's start today's show with Soccer Central Podcast Hall of Famer, Alison Bender. Alison, welcome back to the show.
Oh, I like that introduction. Hi, how you doing?
Great, great. There's one member in the Hall of Fame, and it's you. So be grateful. Alison, you're obviously really close to Chelsea Football Club, and it's been, I guess, an uneasy week, or just over a week, I suppose, regarding the issue of Diego Costa. Now, they bounced back without Costa last weekend. They won the game relying on their wing back to score a couple of goals in Alonso. He's back training this week, though, is Costa. Was this really just a tempest in a tabloid, kind of?
Yeah, it's been a strange week, actually, hasn't it? If you're a Chelsea fan, you're right, because, you know, you go and play Leicester, the current champions, and you beat them. But then you learn of this unfolding story with Diego Costa. And yes, you know, we managed to do it without Costa. And as you said, you know, the unlikely goal-scoring hero, Alonso. But it does make you worry. And you start to kind of think, you know, who else is going to be tempted? Obviously, you've got Oscar, who's gone recently, and Ramirez. And you know these players and who they know and who they can talk to. And there seems to be, I mean, you know, we'll talk more about it, I'm sure, but the Chinese Super League, we have to take seriously now. I mean, there's some really big name players that have gone there, fantastic managers. It's something not to be taken lightly. The thing about the Costa debacle is it's so hard to know what's right, what's wrong, what we believe. So all you can go on really is what, you know, what you're hearing from the manager. And, you know, Conte was very careful with his wording in the press conference and in the interviews afterwards. You know, he told us that Costa had said he had a back problem rather than Costa has a back problem. So you've got to read between the lines a bit there. It sounds like he's fallen out with the medical staff. I think the key is whatever's happened, it seems like it's been resolved. I think Conte's the kind of manager that likes to do things behind closed doors. He said that, in fact. And the fact that we're hearing and we're seeing that he's back in training, he's in contention for the whole game. And I also think, you know, it's no big drama because we've seen that Chelsea can do it without him. Remember when he was suspended around Christmas and Conte actually let him go on holiday to Brazil? And, you know, once again, Chelsea did it with the kind of the sort of false nine, I guess, of Hazard, and it worked. And the fact that Chelsea have a 7-point lead now, you know, if they have to kind of play defensive like they did under Mourinho in 2015 and sort of stagger along to a league title rather than play flamboyant football and get loads of goals, so be it. I don't want Costa to leave. No Chelsea fan wants Costa to leave. But, you know, if indeed that is the case, it seems to me, though, he's going to definitely stay until the end of the season. I think, you know, we hear that Kang Jin were interested. We hear that he's not interested. He's not going to go. I can't see him leaving in January. I really can't. But it's been a strange time for Chelsea fans, definitely.
Well, and more to that, Alison, I mean, a two-part question, I guess. I mean, how do you think Conte has handled this whole sort of soap opera, for lack of a better word? And okay, he might not leave in January, but do you see his long-term future, talking about Diego Costa, at Chelsea? Do you expect him to go in the summer, or will he sort of survive this?
Yeah, part one. I think Conte's handled it brilliantly. It's actually made me realize you can really judge a manager with how they deal with the hard times. We've seen Pep Guardiola under real pressure. I don't know how much it kind of came out over there in North America, but how snippy he was with the press and the media after the defeat to Everton.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, exactly. But Conte has just handled this so well, and it makes you feel that he's really likable. I mean, he's got experience of this kind of thing. I mean, you know, when he was Juventus manager, I think he had a few words with Pogba at various times. I remember hearing about, you know, playing too much flamboyant football and showing off a bit on the pitch and that kind of thing. And he's used to handling big egos. And it looks like, from what we're seeing, I mean, we can only sort of guess, but it looks like he's handled this situation really well, because he seems to have the player on board. He seems to have the fans on board. And, you know, everything seems to be going swimmingly. And the second part of your question, has he got a long-term future? It seems like his head's been turned from what we can gather. I think that it sounds like the manager has spoken to him and said January's not a good time for you to be leaving. I mean, we heard that he's not interested in going, and, you know, he's turned down offers and everything. But I don't know. It does make me think, is this the final season for Costa? And actually, would it be the most terrible loss? I mean, we're hearing reports suggesting Morata, Sanchez, Lukaku could come in and replace him. I mean, yes, he's firing, 14 league goals so far this season, and, you know, he's in a great run. But it wasn't that long ago that we saw him really struggling. And so I could get my head around the fact that perhaps he just stays with Chelsea for the season, helps them to a league title, thank you very much, and then heads on away. But it's all guesswork at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before, I really wonder how much of a loss it would be, because it seems like he's not, I mean, for all the goals he scores, there's always something going on with him, some sort of distraction. I just wonder if he's even worth a bother at this point.
Yeah, there used to be disciplinary issues, didn't there? But it's crazy how quickly football can change, because we saw him being the peacemaker in that Manchester City game. And, I mean, that shocked everyone. I mean, that's not Diego Costa's character at all. But, yeah, I mean, we saw him struggling last season, and everyone was talking about whether we'd spent a load of money for nothing. And, you know, perhaps... It's so difficult to make these calls, isn't it? Because football changes so quickly. And whenever anyone asks me a question on something that might seem ridiculous, I, you know, nowadays you can never say never. I mean, like, for example, some of the best players in the world going to the Chinese Super League, you know, like the Messis of this world, you laugh about it, but nothing surprises me in football anymore. Really, really doesn't. So you can't rule out anything.
Money does talk is apparent. That's the case. And if you can tell a player who's rich already that you can, you know, not just quadruple his pay packet, but make it even bigger, you see why they're turned. But I wonder with Costa, do the fans, do they love him? I mean, obviously there's players in that team who are beloved by the fan base, but given his antics and how there is seemingly always baggage around Diego Costa, has he really got the love of the fan base? Would they be devastated to see him leave?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think you're right. I mean, football fans are particularly fickle. I guess you could say particularly fans like Chelsea fans, who are used to seeing so many players and managers come and go. You know, the love for Mourinho was so heartfelt and strong only a season ago. And now certainly some Chelsea fans have turned quite cold on him very quickly. You know, you've got the people that, like the John Terrys and the Frank Lampards of this world, that the Chelsea fans will always, there'll always be a place in their heart for players like that. But I think you're right. I don't think Diego Costa has quite written himself into Chelsea folklore yet. You can't see a statue going up for Diego Costa. It could be, you know, Didier Drogba is another player who, you know, Chelsea fans absolutely adore. He went about things the right way. I think, you know, if Costa was to leave, I don't think there'd be too many violin playing amongst the Chelsea fans, to be honest with you. They love him right now because he's, you know, making them win. And, you know, when you try and think about what's been the key to Chelsea's success, some might say it's Kante, some might say it's the you know, the amazing wing-back, some might say it's Diego Costa, or the, you know, resurgence of Hazard is because of Costa. So people will love him because of that. But I think, you know, there's no heartfelt, deep love, like you say. I think you know, got it spot on there.
A player that I think was beloved in London is, of course, Dimitri Payet at West Ham. But that is a player who has seen the love fall to the wayside the last week or so, demanding a move, refusing to play. Now, it's not China, apparently, which I think surprised some people. It seems Marseille is his preferred destination. His family's homesick. They're already in Marseille, by all accounts. And it does seem, Alison, in this case, West Ham, the player sadly has more leverage than perhaps at Chelsea, because the team's struggling, because he is by far their best player. Is it fait accompli? This guy will be, if not in Marseille, somewhere else by February the 1st?
Yeah, it's. I think this one's a difficult one. Player power at its finest. I was listening to Julien Laurent the other day, actually, who's a very well-respected French journalist, and he was saying, as you suggested, that his family have already moved back to Marseille, and he's already looking into putting them into school. And once you've got a player's family who've already taken that bold decision, and the player's refusing to play, you know, Slaven Bilic has gone to him and said, listen, you know, I'm going to give you another chance. Do you stick by this? And he's adamant, like you say, he's training with the under-23s. I can't see this one working out for him at West Ham. It's a shame, actually, because I think a lot of people said that it's unfair. Slaven Bilic has been unfair to him because he was faced with the same decision back in 1997. But it's interesting because when he was approached to go to Everton, he actually said, I would not leave the club where they are right now, and I'm happy to play until the end of the season and not leave them in a, you know, a difficult situation or a relegation battle, and then I'll join Everton at the end of the season. But I think it was because Bilic had said all the same things about, you know, how you can't be helped if your head's turned by a bigger club. I don't know how many people buy the whole family reasons to Marseille thing. It's a weird one because he was in Marseille just 18 months ago. I think they sold him for something like 50 million euros. So it's a tricky one because they'll have to pay a lot more money to West Ham to get him back. But, you know, we can only believe what we're hearing, and this is what he's saying. He says it's because of his family. He says he's upset that he's been called a mercenary because he's turned down lucrative offers in China. And, you know, his family are unsettled and unhappy in London, in West Ham, so he wants to return. So that's what we have to believe. But it's a strange story, and it shows player power is absolute best, isn't it? And he's really upset some of the West Ham players, by all accounts.
We're talking to ESPN's Alison Bender here on the Soccer Central podcast. Alison, we've talked about the Chinese Super League, repeatedly throughout this podcast. I know Arsene Wenger kind of came out today and he was talking about, you know, he's quite worried because, you know, with all these sort of big money that's floating around in China, they're setting the new sort of benchmark for wages for star players. I'm interested to hear, because obviously you're on the front lines, what's been the overall general reaction in England to, you know, all this big money that the Chinese super teams are throwing around? Is there a genuine fear that they're going to continue to, lure top talent to the Chinese Super League?
Yeah, I think there definitely is some fear. I think a lot of fans are up in arms because I think they see that obviously the Chinese Super League is not to the level anywhere near of the Premier League. And so particularly when players are leaving at the peak of their careers, I think they're upset because they're saying, you know, the word mercenary again is coming up. They're saying, you know, how dare you leave to play, you know, when you have so much left in you. I think the thing about players leaving to America, which has happened a lot lately, is a very different thing because they're going in the twilight years. They're going there to retire. They've made no secret of the fact that, you know, they're winding down. They're making family choices. But I think this Chinese Super League is different because it's tapping up players. It's speaking to players who are at their peak. We've seen so many great players already. We've got Graziano Pella. He's not a great player. He's a good player. But Hulk and Ramirez, obviously this whole Costa bid. Even players who've turned it down, supposedly, like Robin and Benzema, Falcao and Cavani apparently have been approached. And at some point, these players may make a decision that for 1 or 2 years, financially, you know, this is a good move. I can understand why fans are so upset because they're thinking, well, how much do you need to earn? I mean, who needs what Carlos Tevez has been offered, apparently, £615,000 per week? Who needs that kind of money, especially when you're a well-played player? But I guess, you know, players know that they've got not much time left to play. Then after that, they've got to look for other pursuits, punditry, I guess. And they've got to make as much money as quickly as they possibly can. And they think, you know, why not? I also think, I chatted to a friend of mine who lives in China because I was curious about the kind of, what is the football really like? What are the attendances like? And he says, actually, it's a great experience for the players because they're well attended, these games. The support is fanatical. I know Tim Cahill was going on about it. And it can make the players feel, you know, really wanted, and, you know, particularly players who have been frozen out of their teams or, you know, aren't playing as much football for a couple of years, they can actually really get something out of it. So you can kind of see why they would do it. But the fans are fuming. That's been the overall reaction, I think.
Don't know about you, Alison, but I'm going to send my demo reel there, because if they're paying the players this, I don't know what they're paying the media, but it's probably pretty good. So, hey, why not give it a whirl? Before you go, exactly. This does bring us to Man City against Tottenham. A huge game this weekend. We have it on Sportsnet. You were at the press conference today with Mauricio Pochettino of Spurs, who have now inked their young stars two long-term deals. Good timing, considering what's happening in China right now. This Spurs team, they won six straight games. If they win seven, I believe only five clubs have ever done that before. So they're very much the real deal. Came close last year. Do you see them as a legitimate contender to Chelsea this season?
Do you know, I'm starting to, actually. I think it was funny because, you know, football always makes a fool of you. But a couple of weeks ago, somebody said to me on a podcast, are Liverpool the biggest threat to Chelsea's title chances? And I said, no, it's Manchester City. Manchester City, they're the ones we have to watch. And then, of course, we've seen this almighty collapse from Manchester City, and particularly the game against Everton, which was a disaster. I think the thing about City and what makes Tottenham so different is that Tottenham have a great balance. They've got probably two of the best fullbacks in the Premier League at the moment in Walker and Rose. They've got great attacking talent up front in Kane. They've got Dele Alli, who's magical, but also they've got a really good goalkeeper in Hugo Lloris and other star players throughout the squad as well. When I was at the press conference today, actually, someone asked Pochettino, how does it feel? He's been in charge for 4 years now, and it kind of took me back a bit. I thought, wow, gosh, has it really been 4 years? He was really funny, actually. He said, I'm fatter. He said the lifestyle has taken its toll on me a bit. But he said it's taken a while to adapt to the culture of the Premier League. I think he was sympathising a little bit with Pep Guardiola and saying how, you know, it is a very, very different league, but how he enjoys it. And I think that he's finally kind of found that balance, and he's kind of, you know, obviously they finished, what was it, third in the end?
Third.
They were doing really well, weren't they, and then they dropped off. But right now, they're second in the table. They can go, they can make a 6-point gap over Manchester City, which will suddenly potentially put City out of the title race and Tottenham back in it. And imagine, by the way, I'd forgotten about this, but, you know, they're moving to their new stadium, obviously. Imagine if Pochettino is able to win a Premier League title in their final season at the White Hart Lane as it stands now. I mean, that would be... What an achievement. That would be the best thing they've ever done in their history, I'd imagine, sort of surpassing the title in 61.
Oh, yeah.
So what a season it could be for them.
Yeah, he'll be immortalised, that's for sure, outside the new stadium. Incredible. And they're fun to watch, Spurs, too. I mean, you know, we can criticise certain teams of winning championships, playing a certain way, but they play the right way. And you're right, Dele Alli has found his form at just the right time. He is magical. It's a great word for him. One of my favorites to watch. Alison, thank you so much for this. You are a star and a member of our Hall of Fame. Hope to chat to you real soon.
Oh, pleasure. Lovely talking to you guys. Take care.
Cheers, Alison.
That is Alison Bender of ESPN and numerous other companies. Check her out at AliBenderTV on Twitter. A must follow. And she makes some great points. And she brings up the term, you know, loyalty in sport nowadays, in soccer. And this week especially, it's come to the fore with the whole Costa situation and the Payet situation, and it's easy to jump on these players and say, oh, there's no loyalty in the game anymore, it's disgusting. So what are your thoughts? I mean, there isn't loyalty in the game, so should we be surprised when these players hold these teams over the barrel, so to speak?
No, I mean, and people can say there's no loyalty from the players, but I think there's very little loyalty from the teams as well, right? I mean, they're not above, like, shipping them off or cutting them loose or whatever, so I don't really, you know, blame all the players all that much. You know, It's cliche to say that it's the modern game and this is what it's become, but it is what it is, unfortunately.
What I don't like is when players refuse to play. It's all one thing to ask for a transfer, because you're right, and I'm with you. You know, like you said, teams are happy to sell players off at any time. Although the players don't have to go, in fairness, right? They can always, you know, refuse to negotiate terms with the new team and they're stuck.
Right.
But when they refuse to play, I look at Payet, for example, as a prime example. We discussed this last week, I know, but a guy that the team depend on. And when things go rough, he refuses to play. And if he uses the excuse of his family's not happy, well, you know what? they can live there for a few months. Mm. You can afford to fly back and forth whenever it's convenient. And then this summer, when your team has a chance to rebuild, then you can ask to move. And I think most clubs would accommodate a player in the summertime. But in January, when you're dependent on that player, it's just such a low act, I think, from a player.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing too is I think just the refusing to play, right? And I don't think he's even training with the team as
no,
well.
No, exactly. So. He's on strike, essentially. And he's done it before. Did it with Saint-Étienne.
Right, yeah, yeah, before he moved to Lille. To Lille, yeah. So, I mean, look, if you want to push for a move and, you know, you don't want to be at West Ham anymore and push for a move in the summer transfer window, I'm perfectly fine with that. But, you know, you shouldn't sort of withhold your services, especially for West Ham, because they're in a bit of a relegation scrap. So it's a bit unfortunate that he's taken this course of action. But as I said, I'm not terribly surprised.
And that's what I think has happened with Costa as well. They've spoken to the player and said, listen, we're not going to sell you now. And Chelsea don't have to sell him now. That's where they have the leverage.
Sure.
They can afford to keep him, even if he's not playing. I think Abramovich is so stubborn, he would keep a player on the bench or in the reserves for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
In the summertime, I think he's gone.
I do
Simple
too,
as that. You know, wherever it is, be it China or somewhere else, I think they've had enough of it.
Right.
And they can afford to replace him with, you know, perhaps a better player. In the meantime, they've got a 7-point lead. Can they handle a malcontent Costa? Or do you think he's professional enough to you know, put a smile on and play to his ability? Because last year, we saw a lot of those players not happy, not playing to their ability.
Right.
Including Costa.
Yeah, but he wasn't the only one. You know, I would maybe this is being me being naive. I'd like to think that he can sort of get past this and be professional enough and overcome this and put out, you know, a solid performance and help Chelsea compete week to week. But got doubts. We'll see.
I have a real strong feeling that he's going to be just fine this season and that he's going to play, maybe not with a smile on his face, but when does he ever play with a smile on his face?
Well.
And maybe you want an angry Costa because that's when he's at his best. And he'll score goals and they'll win the championship. And that's what I think they're going to pull away at some point, this team, because they look so, so good. City against Spurs, we touched on it there from the Spurs standpoint, from the Man City standpoint. What has happened here, JMO? They were no world beaters last year, but they were decent.
Yeah,
they're not horrible this year. I mean, last result aside, they're still in fifth place now. They're not going to win a championship, but they're going to compete for the fourth place. But what is the major reason here? Pep hasn't just forgotten how to coach, obviously.
No.
Is it the lack of players coming in over the summer? Is it the injury to Gundogan? Is it Claudio Bravo's terrible? What is the reason for City?
I think it's all those things. I think it's, you know, the Bravo thing really sort of baffles me because I didn't think there was anything wrong with Joe Hart and there was no sort of need to jettison him off to Torino. So there's that. There's the injuries, as you said. And I think they're just a little old in the tooth as well. I mean, you look at guys like Kompany who... You know, God bless him. I think he's been a fantastic servant to the club, but you know, he's not a young guy anymore, and he breaks down far too often. And you know, Sergio Aguero seems not inspired. And and I've said this routinely, their best players have to be their best players on the pitch consistently for this team to really contend. And their best players haven't been. It's, you know, we haven't seen the best from Sergio Aguero. We've kind of seen it from.
Well, yeah, what's happened to Aguero? Is that a guy that's had his head turned? Do you think?
I don't know what it is.
He's not the same player.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I honestly don't know. But he's not the same player that he once was when he first came to City when, you know, he was, I think, the best player in the Premier League. But for whatever reason, and the other thing too is with a new coach, even when someone like Guardiola, it takes time, right, for him to sort of really put his stamp on the club and for the players to buy in and get, you know, working with
the right players.
Yeah. So, I mean, as I said, I think there's a whole list of reasons, as we pointed out, as to why they're not, you know, really pushing Chelsea for the top spot.
Maybe playing Zabaleta and Yaya Toure in the midfield may not be the best choice in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, Zabaleta, I kind of understand just because I think his days as a fullback are over, right? So, but maybe there might be life in him still.
But still, if you're Man City and you've had how many years? I think it's 8 years now. They've been owned by the Abu Dhabi group.
That's
all this
right.
money.
Yeah.
Right. Richest club in the world. And here we are in 2017 and your starting center midfielders. Yaya Toure, is over his best, obviously, and Zabaleta.
Look, I don't think they've done a good job of replacing, you know, players and kind of, you know, not overhauling the roster, but sort of, you know, adding complementary pieces. They've kind of hung on to players a little bit too long. And I think, you know, guys like Kompany and Yaya Toure, and I would say Zabaleta too, are prime examples. So as I said, they haven't done a very good job of kind of pushing out the old guard and bringing in, you know, enough new talent.
For Bravo, just a stat here, his last 22 shots faced, he's given up 14 goals.
Ouch. Well.
Now, in fairness, at Barcelona, I don't think he faced 22 shots over the course of an entire season. Or it seemed that way anyway.
Yeah, well.
It seemed that way. We've got to move on from stupidity with goalkeeper choices to Marco van Basten, one of the great strikers of all time.
Fabulous player.
Retired too early, did his knee. He's now FIFA's technical director, which if you think about it, the game's pretty simple. I mean, I'm not sure what the FIFA technical director is really doing apart from coming up with stupid ideas, because this past week he's come out of some meeting and he's discussed some ideas FIFA are contemplating to better the game. Now, in fairness, you know, his job, I guess, is partly to see what can we do to make this game better. So these aren't set in stone. They're just suggestions.
Right.
Okay. Now, one of which was, let's do away with the offside rule. Okay.
The offside rule completely.
Completely. Okay. That's one thing. The other is that the World Cup, obviously, these ridiculous three-team groups,
right,
they want definitive results from each fixture to right. prevent collusion. So he wants to have a shootout after each game. However, not irregular shootout. MLS circa 1997 style shootouts, where it's a breakaway shootout. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's that.
All right.
Not ideal. One better rule he suggested is the old sin bin, an orange card, 10 minutes off for certain indiscretions, which I don't mind so much. But really, the game doesn't need to be changed, I don't think. I think it works pretty well. I think we're at an era right now where internationally defensive football is in vogue. It will change.
Sure.
The top teams will figure out how to get around those tactics implemented by lesser teams. The game's simple. But these rules, JMO, got a quote here. Just came down now on Twitter from the Rennes coach, Christian Gourcuff, relating to these suggested rules by Van Basten, okay? This is the worst crap I've read in a long time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've not read it wrongly. It's immeasurable bullshit. We would return to a time when it was village against village and people ended up dead. The offside rule is a manifestation of intelligence. There would be no more collective spirit if it was removed. It's a fundamental. If you don't understand that, you don't understand football. Christian Gourcuff,
well,
of French club Rennes.
Tell us how you really feel. Not sugarcoating it there. I'm with you. I don't think, you know, this sport is, look, soccer's not perfect by all means in terms of the way it's sort of regulated and certainly some of the, you know, the rules and the way it's officiated, I get it. But, you know, it doesn't have to be overhauled. We don't have to make, I don't think it has to, you know, you don't need sin bins. You don't need negating the offside rule. You don't need to make major rule changes here. I think the sport for the most part is fine just the way it is.
Let's talk about the Premier League retroactively banning players for simulation and diving, much like MLS does.
Right.
I don't mind those kind of
advancements. I can deal with that. That's fine.
That's
sure.
progress. That makes sense.
Sure.
The technology's improving now. The game's got to change in that regard. But you're sure, right.
Absolutely.
It's 11v11, one ball in the field. It's simple. It's right. simple. The rules are simple.
I think it's interesting you say that because I talked to a friend of mine who's kind of a casual soccer fan, but not, you know, he's a big sports fan in general, but just a casual soccer fan. And he says, look, soccer's greatest sort of, you know, appeal, why it appeals to so many people is its simplicity, right? You look at hockey or, you know, or the NBA or basketball. So many lines on the field, so many rules and different things. Soccer is pretty simple. Can't touch the ball with your hands. You got to use your feet, right? Mm-hmm. And there's not like a terrible amount of markings on the field. It's just, you know, the 18-yard box and the end lines and the touch lines. That's it. So, you know, further to that point, we don't have to go about and like tinker with this to the point of, you know, we don't have to mess up a good thing. And I think we've got a good thing right now.
Do you get the idea that Gianni Infantino comes in as new FIFA head? And he's obviously taking over from a very dark period of time for FIFA and for the world game. And he's just trying to make a big statement to put his imprint on the game. Now, he started that with the World Cup.
Well, I did that with the World Cup.
Boom. This is my World Cup. Now it's my game. Okay, whatever. And now he's, you know, instructing his minions to find new ways to change the game. Isn't that a bit scary? If that's the case, I get the impression that he wants to make some big changes to make this very much his sport.
I don't know. Maybe.
That's terrifying.
Maybe. I mean, maybe that's a bit paranoid on your part.
I'm very paranoid. See, you've gotten to power in the States?
Yeah. I don't know.
Through ego?
Yeah. I don't know if he's trying to. I mean, maybe it's just like a lot of things. I mean, you know, FIFA presidents. And I remember there's a famous quote by, was it Brian Glanville, the famous English reporter? He was talking about Sepp Blatter. Is it something like he'll have like about Blatter, he said, well, you know, he'll have like 10 ideas a day on the game of soccer and 11 of them are all bad or something like that. So, you know, but nothing ever came of them, right? I think it's just, you know, people sort of floating out ideas because that's what they do, right?
So, it gets them in the news too, right?
Sure, absolutely.
People talking about it.
Absolutely.
But, I don't know, Marco van Basten, you know, the shine is coming off somewhat.
Yeah.
This is really unfair because I have nothing but wonderful memories of Marco van Basten. Don't be a laughingstock, please,
no.
As an administrator, please.
What a fabulous player. I mean, I was lucky, you know, growing up watching Serie A with my dad, and my God, I mean, watching him play for AC Milan was, I mean, he was, for me, he's one of the top 10 footballers I ever watched.
I was more of a Ruud Gullit guy.
He was pretty good too.
Just because the hair was so cool.
Yeah.
I had a t-shirt with a Ruud Gullit, like a caricature of him.
I just like Van Basten because I just thought he was such a cultured, you know, footballer. And
that goal against the Soviets in 88.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Oh, was it the Soviets or was it Russia?
No, I think it was the Soviet Union.
88 would still be the Soviets, right?
Yeah. I remember watching that game with my dad at the time. So I watched it live and I just remember, like, we couldn't believe it. Like,
it came out of nowhere.
Well, and he scored from that angle. It's like, what? How the hell did
that's
he
a
do
point.
That?
And it's like, yeah, it was a good tournament as I remember it.
It was a very good tournament.
And yeah, like that ball came across the top of the box and just on that volley.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Impossible angle.
If you haven't seen it, just Google it. Marco van Basten.
Euro 88.
Not Euro, because it wasn't Euro back then, was it?
Yeah,
was it Euro?
Yeah, it was still called a Euro 88. Yeah.
Was it still European Championships?
I mean, it was still referred to as Euro.
It was. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, you'll find it. It's one of the great goals in the history of the game. Speaking of change and people fearing change and massive hyperbole on social media regarding change, Juventus, your very own Juventus, have a brand new crest,
right,
which is unveiled, I guess, on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Monday.
Now, was it Monday? Was it? Okay, now...
Monday, and it was unveiled in Milan, of all places, not in
Turin.
Really?
Why?
Yeah. I think just because it was some sort of art gallery or something like that. So, really? I mean, I don't know.
Well, it's just, before I saw the actual crest, I saw Twitter explode and people saying the most awful things and saying this is a joke. So I was expecting the worst.
Oh, go figure.
And then I saw it and I'm like, yeah, it's all right. It's not so bad.
Right.
You're a diehard, lifelong Juventus fan.
Right.
Do you like it?
I neither like it nor hate it. And
you don't care?
I don't care. Like, it's a logo. It's really, I've got other bigger issues to worry about with Juventus, and like a logo is like at the very bottom of the list. Like, I don't care.
So what do football fans get so upset about these kind of things?
I don't know. People
it's like
don't
an affront to themselves personally.
People don't like change. People, you know, just, I think it's just, they don't like change. Right. I mean, that sort of the stallion or whatever, and like the stripes of the black and white stripes have been, you know, on the crest for forever, right? And the crest has undergone changes.
It hasn't been the same crest for 100 years.
No, it's not. I think they've had this one, I want to say, since 2002. Maybe it's been a little longer, shorter. But the basic theme of the black and white stripes and the bull have always kind of been there. But, and that's kind of been, you know, done away with this new modern, more modern look. But, you know, again, it's a logo. I'm not going to lose any sleep over this.
Not at all.
No.
All right, let's quickly go over the weekend Prem games. We have some good ones, of course, on Sportsnet, including Man City against Spurs. The early one, 7 a.m. Eastern on Sportsnet World, Liverpool against Swansea.
Oh.
The young Reds, they got by Plymouth midweek in the FA Cup replay.
Right.
Not a great game, but they played a lot of kids in that game. That was fine. And they're playing a Swansea team. It's just in this terrible malaise right now. Probably going down, I'd say. Although they're still, I think, just a point back of safety.
Yeah.
New man in charge now, of course. But your thoughts on this one, JMO? Given the recent form of Liverpool hasn't been great.
No.
Last week against United, they are winning the game. They drew in the end, admittedly from a goal that came from an offside position originally. But still, I'll give United credit for staying the course there. Any concerns if you're a Reds fan right now?
I wouldn't think so, just because, I mean, for the game, no, because it's Swansea. And like, if they can't beat Swansea, then yeah, then they've got bigger concerns. This is absolutely a game that they should
fair
win.
Fair enough, yeah.
But, you know, overall, I mean, I don't think there's any reason to sort of push the panic button. I mean, they're still in the title mix. They're still in the thick of the race. So, yeah, I mean, they've looked a little uneven in terms of their performances the last couple of weeks over the course of the FA Cup and in the Premier League. But I don't think there's any reason to be particularly worried about them at the moment.
Jurgen Klopp's been criticised for playing such a young team again in the FA Cup and not really caring about it. What are your thoughts on teams being undermanned in these cup tournaments? They're still professional footballers.
Yeah.
They're still part of the squad. For me, it's the coach's prerogative to pick whatever team he sees best.
Yeah.
Does it bother you when you see these bigger teams dismissing a cup and just playing kids or third stringers?
You know me, I've never been particularly big on cup competitions like the domestic cup, so it doesn't bother me at all. And look, you're talking about like FA Cup replays now, and you're talking about teams that have, you know, coming off a busy Christmas period where they were playing three or four games over, you know, less than a 2 week period. You know, there's going to be rotation. Yeah, there's going to be rotation. There's going to be, you know, I can't blame Jurgen Klopp for fielding a younger team on this. So it's, you know, I'm sorry, FA Cup, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, I still think it's magical. Even though you're seeing the kids playing, I still love the cup. I love what it stands for. And yeah, I'm a big fan. We have Middlesbrough against West Ham. Is there a team in the league that's talked about less than Middlesbrough?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Even like the bad teams, the Hulls, the Swansea's getting pressed because they're so bad.
Right.
Right? But Middlesbrough, no one even talks about them.
But maybe
they're
that's
there. They're lurking near the end, the bad end of the table as well.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't really ever talk about them all that much.
Man City, Spurs, so we're not going to today either.
Yeah.
Sunday, we have the only one, Southampton, Leicester, and then Chelsea against Hull, the aforementioned Hull. So a busy week in the Premier League on Sportsnet.
And Bundesliga starts up again.
This weekend, yeah.
And this weekend as well. So we'll have coverage of that.
Yeah, check out sportsnet.ca for your coverage and for your schedules. Anything else you want to get to, JMO? What's happening on sportsnet.ca?
Well, we got a story now on Christian Pulisic, the young American who's starring at Borussia Dortmund. Canada is playing Bermuda in an international friendly, the men's team on Sunday. And Gavin Day is going to be in Bermuda for us. He's going to be filing reports. And then we'll have like...
Tough gig, Gav.
Yeah, it's a really tough gig. And then we're going to have, you know, full Premier League coverage, preview coverage starting tomorrow and other things as well. So a lot of good stuff, a lot of original content on the website today and this entire week. So you should check it out if you get a chance.
When's Canada naming a head coach?
I think before the Gold Cup, which is this summer.
I would hope before the Gold Cup this summer.
Yeah.
These games, where's Bermuda ranked?
186.
Right. What is the point?
The point is just to get, well.
There's no point.
There is a point. There is a point, but I can't.
Intelligent and strategic when you're planning friendlies. Okay, FIFA rankings, we hate them, but they are important.
Right.
Right. You got to structure your calendar to play teams that might help you gain points, not just by winning and getting a couple of points against a crap team, a terrible team, even worse than you are. You have to start. This is what Iceland did. They started planning against teams and had a plan to move up the rankings properly.
Right.
I don't see that from Canada.
No, neither do I, and it's quite telling that they're playing a tiny Caribbean nation in January. I don't think there's a I won't say anything more about that.
Was it done purely for Gavin?
No.
Gavin Day.
No.
I don't know how you wangle it, mate, but you get the big best gigs, the best trips, and I think somewhere the CSA are organizing their calendar as per Gavin's demands.
Well, to be fair, he's got to scramble to put all these trips together, right? Because a lot of time he's doing it at his own cost. And he's got to...
Oh, cry me a river.
Well, I'm just saying.
Pay your way.
I'm just saying. So, yeah, I mean, playing in Bermuda, it's not a... Yeah, January, it's not not a bad gig for Gavin. But
it'd be a lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what Canada gets out of a game like this, I wouldn't think a terrible amount.
No, I don't think so either. All right, we're out of time. I am not back on Monday, but I believe Dobby and Dunlop will be. I'm on vacation for a week. Are you back next Thursday?
I don't know. We'll play it by ear.
We'll just follow John on Twitter at John Molinaro.
I'll let you know.
At James Sharman, although I'll be off Twitter for at least a week.
Yeah. Sunning yourself in Barbados, right?
Yep. No. Yeah, Barbados, yeah. Rubbing lotion into my skin.
Maybe Canada could play Barbados while you're there.
Yeah.
They're already in the neighborhood.
Hey, tell the wife that. Hey, by the way, I've got tickets. What for?
Canada. Yeah, I'm sure that'll go over well.
Yeah, pretty well. All right. Our thanks to Alison Bender, who, as always, was wonderful. Our thanks to Eric Prime behind the glass. Hope you enjoyed that, and cheers for listening.